at 11:30, Words and Pictures, iconic cartoonist Tom Gauld, who's known for his work in The New Yorker and The Guardian, talks about his graphic novels, Parenthood and Dystopias. And again, we remind you that KBOO is keeping you informed with all kinds of truth. And you can get involved by going to kboo.fm and click where it says donate, and you can join us by becoming a member, and that would be fantastic. We have one announcement before we get to Press Watch. Thanks for tuning in this morning.
KBOO hosts a monthly film series at the Clinton Street Theater called KBOO at the Clinton. This month, we'll screen the film This Changes Everything on Thursday, January 11th at 7 p.m. Filmed over 211 shoot days in 9 countries and 5 continents over 4 years, This Changes Everything is an attempt to reimagine the vast challenge of climate change. The film is narrated by Naomi Klein and presents 7 portraits of communities on the front lines, from Montana to South India to Beijing and beyond. Again, that's a film screening of This Changes Everything, Thursday, January 11th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. The Republicans had demagoguery, gerrymandering, poll closures, vote switching the Electoral College, and the Democrats' sleazy primary stealing strategy to help Republicans win the presidency. They didn't need the Russians' help, but the Mueller probe and the congressional inquiries are digging up a Nixonian level of sleaze. They're following the money, and that was just a guaranteed great seam of gold. So I'd like to invite you to call in, and you can call in early if you like, getting cue. And let's take a more comprehensive look at the results so far of following the money, money, money of the Trump Organization. But first, I would like to do some headlines. Oh, and here's the number if you want to call in, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Radio Havana, Cuba reports the U.S. State Department has shifted its travel warning rate to Cuba from level 4 to level 3, category 4 issued on September 29th. Advise U.S. citizens not to travel to the island, citing the alleged sonic attacks on American diplomats based in Havana and their relatives. The United States also ordered the evacuation of most of its employees at its embassy in the Cuban capital. The new travel advisory has placed Cuba on level 3, which recommends U.S. citizens to reconsider visiting the island. The new warning still asserts that U.S. citizens may be at risk, since the U.S. has not been able to identify the source of the health disorders of its staff. The new Cuba travel advisory also eliminated reference to the responsibility of the Cuban government to prevent attacks against U.S. diplomats, which was included in the previous one. In a special teleconference on the department's new travel advisory Wednesday, Michelle Bernier-Toth, acting deputy assistant secretary for overseas citizen services, said that the measure was taken after a very careful assessment. She said, "We talked to all of our experts, and this is where we came out on Cuba." End quote. This week, an FBI report quoted by the Associated Press says that the agency has not any evidence pointing to the occurrence of those attacks following months of investigation and 4 trips to Havana. And speaking for myself, they didn't find any evidence of UFO attacks or of Bigfoot attacks. And I doubt that the FBI looked at the historical record of such stunts versus Cuba. And if they had, they might well have found that if there were any health problems with their diplomats, they probably originated with the Miami Cubans that have been employed for so long. and over the long term to such little effect versus Cuba. So you can find that on Radio Havana Cuba, but of course if you do, then like me, you'll be tagged as someone who pulls up Radio Havana Cuba, this being the 21st century and this being the United States. And in other headlines, I listened to a headline on the way in to the studio, and I was with Sam, and that's the same Sam that you hear on the air here at KBOO Portland. And I wanted to hear the latest headlines, so switched over to the NPR station, and they ran a lovely story about Walmart, and so I'll quote some of it. Walmart, NPR said, is raising salaries for new employees from $10 to $11 an hour, expanding paid parental leave, and offering a one-time bonus to eligible workers. Actions of the company says will affect more than 1 million employees in the U.S. The company said the changes are a way to allow workers to share in tax savings. So I'll just stop for a moment and let you go ahead, get it out of you. I mean, basically, that phrase resulted in Sam and I exploding in expletives at the radio, as you do. And, you know, of course, we had to put our attention back on the road because that's an absurd thing to say. But, you know, this is NPR, right? So they're going to give you some balance on it. No. No, they didn't. They follow with the new GOP tax law, which President Trump signed last year, includes deep cuts in corporate tax rates. And then they quoted Walmart President and CEO Doug McMillon saying in a statement, quote, "We are early in the stages of assessing the opportunities tax reform creates for us to invest in our customers and associates and further strengthen our business, all of which should benefit our shareholders." And they said the wage hike... Excuse me, that's a one-syllable hike. The wage hike comes after several years. I guess that's a Texan coming out in me. I just want to put an extra syllable in. Once again, the wage hike comes after several years of Walmart raising the floor on its hourly pay. Over the past 2 years, Walmart has raised its starting hourly wages twice to $9 and then to $10. The federal minimum wage is $7.25. Last fall, Target raised its minimum hourly wages to $11 and announced plans to eventually raise the rate to $15. Walmart's new benefits to employees also include a one-time bonus for eligible hourly associates, including part-time workers. The amount will range up to $1,000 for employees who have been with Walmart for at least 20 years. $1,000, whoop-dee, I can't say that. Yeah, so it just goes on. The company will also expand hourly leave, and it's hard to get through that whole thing without expressing my outrage. So, well, I'm almost at the end of it anyway, so, you know, hold your nose, here we go. The company will also expand hourly leave, providing full-time hourly associates in the U.S. with 10 weeks of paid maternity leave and 6 weeks of paid parental leave, it says. Previously, Walmart provided fully paid family leave to salaried workers, while hourly workers receive half pay during family leave. And that's the end of it. And, of course, it's hard to know where to start, but just for that last bit, when they say for full-time employees, that isn't very many employees by percentage, because they try to keep people out of getting full-time wages because they don't like to pay wages, and let me just lay some of that on you. From those dedicated insurgent communists at Forbes magazine, thus, Walmart's low-wage workers cost U.S. taxpayers an estimated $6.2 billion in public assistance, including food stamps, Medicaid, and subsidized housing, according to a report published to coincide with Tax Day. This is from 2014. And speaking for myself, of course, what I'm doing here is trying to counter this afflatus posing as news that NPR has perpetrated on the public. And so, okay, Walmart is raising their wages a little bit, $11. You just try and live on $11. Go ahead. You're not going to get full time, so you just go over to Walmart and get yourself a job, and you can get paid $11 for however many hours they'll actually let you have. And go ahead and try to pay rent with that and see what happens. Americans for Tax Fairness, returning to the text, from, as I said, Forbes magazine from 2014. A coalition of 400 national and state-level progressive groups made this estimate using data from a 2013 study by Democratic staff of the U.S. Committee on Education and Workforce. The study estimated the cost to Wisconsin's taxpayers of Walmart's low wages and benefits, which often force workers to rely on various public assistance programs, reads the report. It found that a single Walmart Supercenter costs taxpayers between $900,000 and $1.75 million per year, or between $3,000 and $5,800 on average for each of 300 workers. Like I said, that's from Forbes magazine. So that's what Walmart does to your tax base. Let's talk about what Walmart does to your town. When a Walmart comes to town, and this is from the dedicated insurgent communist at Time magazine, the local economic framework is immediately thrown into turmoil. Many small and regional businesses get trampled by the low prices made possible by the massive economies of the scale of the giant retailer. And of course, what they don't say is it's not just the massive economies of scale, it's the extractively low wages. But, Time wrote, it's nearly impossible to compete. Case in point, a 44-year-old grocery store in North Carolina saw a 30% sales drop immediately when a nearby Walmart opened a couple years ago. According to a Bloomberg News story, when the mom-and-pop supermarket cut prices, the Walmart would match or undercut them. The store finally succumbed to the inevitable last October, closing up entirely. This is a common enough tragedy in rural America. But what happens when the Walmart itself closes? Until recently, this wasn't too much of a concern, as Walmart store closures have been rare. But last week, the company announced plans to close over 269 stores, including over 100 small express stores that primarily serve rural small towns. Now, that article is from Time magazine, is also dated, so it didn't actually happen last week. But this is what Walmart does. They open big stores in little towns, and in a town like Portland, they open, I think it was 17 stores, and they have a strategy. And the strategy is they undercut because they do have that economy of scale, because they are huge, because they are a multi-billion dollar corporation. They can sell at a loss and sell at a loss and sell at a loss and sell at a loss. And after a while, everyone around them who can't sell at a loss closes down, and then they close their stores for more of that economy of scale. Whoops, surprise. And we've already seen that cycle happening in Portland, but fortunately for us, it didn't work. And I'll explain why it didn't work. And it also relates to why Walmart is raising wages slightly. It has nothing to do with their tax cut. It has nothing to do with them having a beneficial attitude to the worker, to their, as they say, associates. They're not associates. They're abject employees hired and fired at will or a whim. So now, let's talk about why exactly Walmart wants to raise wages. As I said, Walmart isn't in the business of making their employees happy, and they're not in the business of making the local economy hum. They're in the business of extraction. So why do they have to raise wages? Because they have to, not because their taxes were cut. When the taxes are cut, that raises their profits. That goes to the billionaire family. More on them in a minute. No, they're raising wages because other people are getting better wages. And why are other people getting better wages? Is it because President Trump is a genius who is stable? No, it's because dope. Dope sales are rocking several major economies, certainly including Oregon, starting up on California. California being a huge chunk of the U.S. economy. And the thing about marijuana sales is it's local. There are certainly big businesses trying to change this and doing so in some pretty sneaky ways. But right now, it tends to be a local business. And what's more, because the federal government, now led by Jeff Sessions, in terms of enforcement anyway, Attorney General Jeff Sessions doesn't allow the use of the national banks in processing money and making loans. The money is staying in the local economies, and this is having a tremendous effect. Local economies are effloresing under the cash that is literally being grown out of grown out of the ground in the money trees that marijuana now represents. But let me quote this from Oregon economist Bo Whitney. And, well, this is where I have slipped up. I want to be able to attribute this information And all I can tell you is that it's a local source. I think it might be Oregon Live, and I apologize if that's wrong. Anyway, Oregon economist Bo Whitney was asked by the state government to estimate the impact of legalization of marijuana to the state's economy. In an astounding report released, Whitney pegs the national cannabis market at a level approaching that of the wine market and suggests there are more than 1,000 Oregon businesses involved in the legal cannabis industry. Overall, Whitney estimates there are 12,000 cannabis-touching jobs in Oregon that are producing $315 million in wages for workers, leading to over $1.2 billion in economic activity in the state. And as I said, that money is going to the workers. That money is going to local people. People are getting paid. 917 OLCC licensed cannabis businesses and an additional 1,200 and change applications for cannabis businesses. And 12,500 jobs associated with the cannabis industry. Now, that wage is $12.13 per hour on average. Not that much, but higher than Walmart, and that's why Walmart is raising their wages, period. And I was talking about how Walmart is about extraction. And if you're an efficient capitalist, then you understand that capitalism extracts everything. You know, it extracts, as I said, in the case of Walmart, it extracts tax base. If you're in the direct extraction industry, like the timber or oil industry, it rapes the land. It sucks its wealth out of what it can get, and that certainly includes employees. And when you are an employee for a corporation, the reason you are an employee and the reason that you have no rights, right down to whether you have any input on where the business is going and what it's doing, is so that you can be set to work productively, and most of that productivity can be taken away, or however as much as they can get away with taking away, it will be taken away and aggregated at the top. And then that creates a situation in which people have a very small group of people have more and more power, and so they can demand even more. The Walton family, quoting Wikipedia, is an American family whose collective fortune makes them among the richest families in the world. The majority of their wealth derives from the heritage of Bud and Sam Walton, who are the co-founders of the world's largest retailer, Walmart. The three most prominent living members, Jim, Rob, and Alice, have consistently been in the top 10 of the Forbes 400 since 2001, as were John and Helen prior to their deaths. Christy Walton took her husband John's place after his death, and as of December 2014, the Waltons collectively own 50.8% of the community and are worth a combined total of $170 billion, and I can guarantee you that number is higher now. And they were born with it. That's how they earned their wealth. They were made in vagina, and so was their wealth. And they haven't worked a day in their lives. They never will, but they'll tell you what to do and how to do it. And that's capitalism. And I brought these things together to counter the effect of, as I said, the radio afflatus that took the place of a news article about the Walton family and their ridiculous statement that they have raised wages because of the tax cut, implying, of course, that Trump's policies are helping the little guy. Well, that's a lie. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Now, as I was saying at the top of the hour, originally today, what I really wanted to talk about was the Trump administration and the investigations of it, because it's kind of reminded me of, Nixon times and Senator Sam Ervin, and I was a teenager, and I wouldn't have understood it if it weren't for my friend's mother who explained things to me. But as I was saying, the Republicans had demagoguery, gerrymandering, poll closures, vote switching the Electoral College, and the Democrats' sleazy primary stealing strategy to help them win the presidency, and they didn't need the Russians' help. But we know now that the Russians did, well, kind of mess with the election. And we also know that when pressed on it, the Russians have said, "You've done this to us for years. We thought we'd see how you liked it." And so what they did was they bought ads, and they created little groups on Facebook and kind of stirred up things in terms of race relations in the U.S., which are fraught because, you know, we absolutely refuse to deal with or even name whiteness. And they created some level of trouble. How much, I don't know. Of the 62 million and change who voted for Trump, how many of them were influenced by the Russians? I don't know. I mean, I'd say more of them were influenced by the post-Civil War aggregation of racist power. But I invite you to call in 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Once again, that's area code 503-231-8187. I'm Teresa Mitchell. You're listening to KBOO Portland, and I have my baritone announcer voice that I've always used. However, I would like you to know that I am actually transgender, and so this voice, which sounds male, isn't. Confusing, isn't it? And I just like to leave it that way. It's working fine for me. So call in 503-231-8187. Let's take a more comprehensive look at the results so far of following the money of the Trump organization. And I've been saying for many months now, I'm proud to say, this is a I told you so thing. You know, I get to do this because the mic's still open, I guess, basically. I'm proud that I did say from the get-go that who cares about them fiddling with the elections, because if you really want to know what happened with the election, I mean, the Republicans did steal the election, and you can find out how by reading gregpalace.com. It's not any of the Russians. But it did lead to this investigation. It is outrageous. It is outrageous if the, and it's starting to look like the Trump organization did allow the Russians to mess with the election, at least to the point of having a meeting and saying, gee, we sure would like some dirt on Hillary Clinton. And they took it very very eagerly from WikiLeaks as well. And I think that things that have come out now are pointing to the likelihood that Trump, and even WikiLeaks for that matter, the Trump organization really didn't think that they were going to win. They thought that they were going to get a lot of money and a lot of publicity, basically. And good feelings, sort of in the way that Bob Dole did after losing. Bob Dole could sell stuff on commercials, and it was just... I think they would have been raking in more money than he did, but it's that same sort of phenomenon. They didn't really think they were going to win, so why would they care if they went and did these things, which, if they had won, and they did win, look rather traitorous. But let's go over what we know so far about the investigations. Trump owned and ran the Miss Universe pageant, and in 2013, he took it to Moscow, and Moscow laid the glitz on him. He got to show up at a party from a freight elevator in which he was in a limo, and he's allowed to drive, well, not drive, but to be driven in the limo out into the party floor, you know, big, huge, splashy thing. And that's a creepy thought right there, isn't it? With Trump owning and running the Miss Universe pageant, we know how he treated the women there. But with the revelations of Trump's attitude towards women, it's especially creepy. But it was in Moscow that Trump met up with Putin-connected individuals and may have been subjected to kompromat, which is the traditional Russian government method of, seeing what kind of sleaze you'll get into and videotaping it, possibly including sexual favors. And we know this possibility through the Steele dossier, a collection of espionage from former GCHQ operative in Britain who took money from the Trump's opposition and the Republican and then the Democratic parties. So I will use the timeline from The Guardian, and we'll go over this. Right now I want to go to the first caller, though. Number to call, 503-231-8187, and Shelley's on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for everything you do. And I work for a big communications company, and just today got my $550, what was left over from the $1,000 check today, which I'm happy for, but I don't understand why they're giving this to us, because I've worked in corporations my whole life, and I've never ever had any corporation just suddenly decide to give everybody $1,000, and I don't understand it. So I know you were talking about it earlier about the cannabis industry or whatever, but I'm confused.
Okay, well, I don't mind repeating because I think people need to understand this. They're doing it because they have to. They need to retain your goodwill, and they need to retain your employee, because now there is some competition for workers for the first time in a long time, certainly at least since 07, although the economy's been declining for a long, long time. And we've all been quite desperate. And if you look at the real numbers, from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, if you look at the numbers of how many people who are capable of work are actually not in the workforce, it's getting close to 50%. That's a tremendous, tremendous unemployment rate, but they don't phrase it that way. They have all these that, you know, they add in the Army, they take out people who haven't applied lately, and they come up with this figure of like it's 4, 5, 6%, whatever it is. This is always bogus. This is always a lie. So what's happening now with Walmart and with your company is they're realizing that due to a change in the economy, and as I was saying, in states like Oregon, and through a cascading effect through the, if I may make a pun, through other regions, people are getting work. People are getting more than Walmart wages just going to the dope store. And the money is bouncing around the economy in other ways. It's like if you're getting work and you haven't been getting work, well, you can buy a burrito when you feel like it. So the burrito stand's doing okay, if you see what I mean. This money is staying in the local economy and is building on itself. Because it's not being sent to the national banks. It's staying in the local economies because the national banks are forbidden from dealing with the dope cash. The dope cash is simply aggregating. It used to go out to Mexico. It used to go to millionaire and billionaire drug lords, and now it's staying in the economy. So your company gave you $1,000 because they had to.
Okay, so you're just saying, so it's not just the cannabis industry, but you're just saying that because people are underemployed and unemployed and they don't have enough money to buy the goods that capitalism produces, that's why they're giving us the money.
What I'm saying is that people have been unemployed and underemployed and they've been able to pay so little and never give you a bonus, which used to be a tradition 30 years ago. Now that's changing a little bit, and companies are realizing that they need to keep your goodwill because it costs them more now to hire someone new.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I don't understand why more companies are not doing this then.
Well, I guess I think that just depends on their perceptions and it depends on the force of this localized economy.
So it really has nothing to do with the tax cut, really, per se?
No, because you go to business school, you get your MBA, and you would be considered an idiot. To give the money to your employees. You pay your employees as little as you possibly can. You aggregate the money towards the top. That gives you the good resume. And then you get hired by someone else who likes money.
All right.
The employees don't have power in that equation. So the amount that you are paid for whatever you do is determined not by the goodwill and not by the bank account of the company you're working for. It doesn't matter how profitable it is. What matters is how much they can extract from you. So, and that is dependent on how many people are desperate. So your wage is an indication of how desperate everyone else is.
It's interesting because I just heard one of my coworkers, his wife works for the Vancouver Clinic, and they gave everybody a $2 an hour raise.
That's a good sign.
But I'm reading this book called The End of Capitalism by Wolfgang Streck. Have you ever heard of that?
No, I haven't read that.
Well, it's fascinating. I recommend it. It's kind of hard to read. He's German, and he kind of writes with an accent, sort of. But there's also a number of really good lectures of his on YouTube, and it just talks about, you know, how basically capitalism is now to the point where it's killed off all of its enemies, all of its competition, like the trade unions and the public sector and all these things that actually kept capitalism working because people had enough money to spend and had employment and all that, but you know, capitalism has worked hard to eliminate those enemies, and now they're gone, and so now it's coming to its inevitable end where people don't have jobs and people can't buy what they, you know, capitalism makes, and there's no way to reform like the unions and all that because everything's been globalized, so people are spread out, you know, all over the world. They don't speak the same language, they can't collectively organize, you know, all the things you know about. But anyway, it's a fascinating book.
Well, thanks for telling me about that.
Sure. I just wish more people understood what's going on so that we could organize and, you know, make a better society for ourselves.
Well, NPR, it wasn't helping with that one with that one article. Well, thank you very much for calling in. I'll go to the next caller. I believe Roger's on the air.
I'd hate to interrupt your fascinating program to comment, but first of all, $1,000 bonus is like a temporary 50-cent raise that expires at the end of the year, unlike the corporate tax cuts, which never expire. But I really was wondering, in terms of you're getting onto this groupthink a little bit. I know you're skeptical of the Russiagate thing and the so-called dossier from the former spy, you know, and you know, I mean, it's interesting and all, but I think the money laundering thing that's coming out much more is really what it's all about. It's
not, I quite agree. That's where the force of it is.
I mean, I think Trump's one big money laundering machine, and all his, you know, he's got a lot of Russian clients, but he's also got a lot of Azerbaijani and Turkish and Filipino and Indonesian clients all over the world pouring money. So most of any money he put into the campaign is not only foreign, but it's probably laundered. Anyway, I want to let you get back to your fascinating analysis and listen on the radio. Thank you.
Now that brings me back to my originally intended topic before I blew up listening to NPR, so thanks for bringing that up.
Okay.
The number to call, 503-231-8187. Now let's, I want to turn to the Guardian, guardian.co.uk timeline. Late 2015, Britain's spy agency GCHQ becomes aware of suspicious interactions between people with Trump ties and Russian intelligence operatives. GCHQ warns U.S. intelligence. Then we move to March 2016, the hacking and influence campaign. The first phishing emails began to hit Democratic individuals, the Democratic National Committee having been hacked months earlier. Hundreds or thousands of imposter accounts appear on Facebook, Twitter, and other social media. And as I was saying before, I find that sort of thing quite offensive, and I think anyone would, because it's a violation of sovereignty. It does take place in the context of retaliation for U.S. continuous, if you follow what the CIA has done for so long, violations of sovereignty in exactly the same manner. But it's obnoxious. And as I was saying, and as Roger was saying, I really don't think that's the main force of what we're now finding through the investigation. It's following the money that is far more interesting. Now, moving to the 31st of March 2016, again, coming from The Guardian, Trump is told about Russian contacts of at least one aide, and Jeff Sessions shoots down a possible Trump-Putin meeting. According to multiple people present later, Trump and Sessions repeatedly deny there had ever been such contacts by anyone in the campaign with Russian operatives. And that's where George Papadopoulos pops up. He pled guilty to false statements, blabbed about Hillary dirt to an Aussie diplomat. He is probably now cooperating, and he was associated with the Trump business and Trump campaign. Then there was the Trump Tower meeting on the 9th of June, 2016. Top Trump campaign advisors, including Donald Trump Jr., met at Trump Tower with Russian operatives, having been promised official documents and information that would incriminate Hillary Clinton. A Russian present, who was present, said that sanctions were discussed. So we're going down the timeline here. Again, you can get that at The Guardian. And I have another call. The number to call, 503-231-8187, and Lynn is on the air.
Hey, Teresa,
hey.
Thank you so much for your show. back to Walmart, I heard this on a little story on NPR that Walmart has set up an in-house payday loan kind of thing so that their employees can get a loan.
To pay their electric bills because they don't make enough.
right. Isn't that a gem?
Oh, gosh, that's so, gosh, who knew, you know, what softies the Walmart organization was.
And they reported it on NPR just like it was a normal sort of thing. And anyway, since you're talking about Kmart, I wanted to mention that. Oh, dear. Anyway, thanks for going on.
Yeah, thanks for calling in.
You're welcome, bud.
Okay, and the number to call, 503-231-8187. I've been talking about capitalism and Walmart and NPR, National Private Radio, National Pentagon Radio. So much wonderful stuff on NPR. I love it. I listen to it all the time. Not nearly as much as KBOO. I love KBOO, but, you know, I'll tune in if I, you know, like I'm a news junkie. And so if there's not news on KBOO, then I'll, you know, I'll sneak over there. And that's what I was doing this morning on my way in here, top of the hour, 8 o'clock. And they just run this grotesque bootlicking story on Walmart, and I just can't let it stand. So you're welcome to call about that. But I am talking about the timeline and the interesting juicy, or as Bannon says, greasy. Such a disgusting statement I'm extracting that from. The greasy goods on the money that is being exposed, and the money laundering, the Soho Tower apartment money laundering type thing that's being exposed by the investigations of the Trump administration. So the number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. And I've gotten as far as the Trump Tower meeting on the 9th of June. And skipping ahead, and this is a bare-bones timeline. It's fascinating, though, because at The Guardian, they have links on each of these, and it's intended that you should go through the timeline, see something that maybe you kind of remember or didn't know about, click the link and find more details. And so it's a good way to learn. But skipping ahead to 18th of July of 2016, the Republican National Convention convenes in Cleveland, Ohio. And speaking for myself, that's that wonderful convention in which you recall Ivanka going up on the stage with her daddy and him just basically feeling her up. I mean, just, if you just want to see something weird, just pull that up on YouTube. Anyway, the convention convenes. Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak is right there. Top Trump campaign aides vociferously deny contacts with Russian operatives, and WikiLeaks releases 44,000 emails from the Democratic National Committee. And the number to call is 503-231-8187, and Pear is on the air.
Hey, good morning, Teresa.
Good morning.
Well, I don't know where to begin. I'm just...
Just jump in there.
Okay, did you listen to Flashpoint last week? They interviewed William Binney, who's with the NSA.
I missed that.
Okay, and he's basically saying that the Democratic Party information was not hacked. It had to be leaked. And he said the reason why is because there would not be enough time. You know, they had these time signatures on these messages.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that before, that okay. Basically they that had to be extracted through a thumb drive or something.
Right, so somebody within the organization did a thumb drive and passed it on to WikiLeaks, you know. So that's how all the DNC stuff came out. Plus, we have to keep reminding ourselves that this is information we were entitled to get anyway, you see.
Yeah, okay. I mean, yeah.
so we couldn't dispose of all that stuff. As far as the, propaganda campaign, I would just say that if Putin can get those results on his small budget, I think we got to hire him to be our voice of America or something, you know? I mean, it's, you know, the amount of money they spent on the Internet was minuscule compared to all the money our corporations and government spent
on
their propaganda. What it makes you think of, you know... Back in the civil rights struggle, you know, the people of the South were always complaining about the outside agitators coming in and kind of upsetting their happy black folks. And it seems very similar, you know, that somehow Putin has got this. And you look at the messages that they actually did send over the Internet. I mean, they're all over the place. I mean, they just kind of... you know, it's pretty lousy propaganda, if you ask me. So anyway, I'm just kind of, you know, I don't trust The Guardian that much anymore. One more thing, you can find it on the web. Real News broadcaster Aaron Maté interviewed Luke Harding, who is one of the. He just wrote a book about all this stuff. And Aaron Maté, you got to see it on the web. He reduced Harding to a puddle of blithering idiocy, really. I mean, it's hard to describe. He just kept zeroing in on where is the evidence, you know, and everything, and Harding is kind of going all over the place, and it's indescribable. So it's just, you know, maybe there's something there, but it's like they keep talking about it, but... you know, you look under the shell and there's no pee there.
Yeah, it is just looking at it from the Democratic National Committee's perspective. It's a shell game, I agree, and they like you to look over there and not look at corporate hegemony and what it means in terms of, well, the DNC. I mean, mm-hmm. they're there for the corporations, and they ain't there for you. They're there for Walmart and not for you. And
you know, one final question, too. If the Russians can blackmail Trump, why can't the CIA or the Pentagon, you know?
Well, yeah. he's blackmailable is the problem here.
That's another thing that William Binney says, is that the NSA, they've got every electronic telephone message in the United States. They have it, you know. They know everything that's going on. And so, I mean, it's like, who is blackmailing Trump?
Well, there could be a long list at this point, I suppose.
Well, I think so. I mean, I think, you know, I'm pretty sure there's a lot of stuff that he's could be blackmailed about, mainly financial stuff, you know, and his bankruptcies and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know. So far, I really have to think that the Russian element is pretty small compared to all the other stuff.
I quite agree. You know, and it's time to look at capitalism and Republicans and Democrats and the good cop, bad cop paradigm that we have here. And thanks a lot for calling in. Per, I'm going to go to Jeff, who's been waiting online. Hello, Jeff. You're on the air. Number to call, 503-231-8187.
Hey, just had a comment about the payday loan thing. I didn't listen to the NPR story, but I kind of wonder when that initiative started, because it seems pretty similar to what Uber's been doing with making subprime loans to their drivers in order to buy cars so that they can then drive a newer car.
Oh, debt's a great way to control someone, hence the 30-year mortgage.
Yeah, that's all. I just wonder, like, whether this was a thing that came up in-house at Walmart or whether it was pioneered by the tech roads.
When you say that, do you mean who came up with the... Oh, okay. I'm not able to question you on that. So, well, just to reiterate, closer to the top of the hour, I was talking about a piece that NPR did on Walmart this morning, posing as journalism, and by its omissions really amounted to an ad and a flatus for the ridiculous assertion that Walmart, out of the goodness of their capitalist hearts and in reaction to the tax break given them by the oh-so-generous Trump administration, was raising wages. That is certainly not why they are raising wages. And gave the details, including the fact that they're a hideously predatory corporation aggregating billions to an inheritance class, to a dynasty, that they have a habit of extracting wealth from the population, both in terms of the tax base, in terms of the employees that have to be paid, various forms of public assistance, including food stamps, because they are paid so little, the fact that they destroy towns intentionally when they move in with their surplus stocks and their artificially deflated prices, and the fact that they are now raising wages simply because, partly because of the marijuana economy, but certainly because the economy is creating some competition for their workers, therefore they are forced to raise wages, and they certainly would not do it for any other reason. And they are simply maintaining their level of predation at the lowest possible wage. That's what they do. That's why they're there. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. The other line of inquiry I'm bringing here is the timeline. I'm using the Guardian's timeline of the investigation of Trump. So I'll call in with your comments and questions on that. 503-231-8187. And Robert's next.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You've got a great program, by the way.
Thank you.
My question is twofold. Do you believe, number one, that Trump is going to be impeached? And if so, when?
Okay, well, I'll address that first then. No.
Okay.
Oh, no, well, I'll take it back. Okay, he may be impeached, but he's certainly not going to be convicted and removed in that way. Because there are too many Republicans and they like the power too much. They're not going to do that.
Okay, I can understand that. And who do you think the Democrats have the best chances of winning as a candidate next election?
Well, I suppose Sanders is getting older. There's been talk about Oprah, and you know, I'm just repeating what you already know, so I guess I'm not much use in answering that question. I'm sorry.
Yeah, because I was thinking Joe Kennedy. Do you think he has a shot at it?
Well, he's got the name Kennedy, and Americans seem to go for dynasties these days.
Yeah. Well, thank you for your time. I appreciate it, and you have a pleasant day.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Number to call, 503-231-8187. And I'll go to the next caller. Hello.
Hello. You know, first of all, this whole notion about Trump in collusion with Russia, that's the biggest misnomer out there, because he don't have to collude. We're now in a one-world government. And so when people talk about collusion, they miss the point that, you know, this is one-world government. He ain't got to collude. They all work together. Second of all, you know, when you talk about Walmart and the corporations exploiting workers, it's the right. It's the Democrats that want all these unskilled, uneducated, illegal aliens drifting into America. You guys are for DACA. You for all open borders. So when these people come into America, what do you think they're going to do? They're going to keep the wages for America lower. So you can't get on Walmart without and be for DACA. So that's a contradiction. And so I just wanted to call and straighten you guys up.
Okay, well, I would disagree with some of the basis of your assertion. I think certainly people are here in illegal status. I think it's offensive to call people illegal. I know what you're referring to, at least. But people are driven here by wars, earthquakes, and economic necessity. Economic necessity certainly being driven by U.S. capitalism and pointedly, for example, by the destruction of the corn market by NAFTA. And by the extreme violence that the U.S. has exported to North, Central, and South America.
Now, you know, you mentioned something about, and I've heard the left say that no one is illegal and it's offensive for legal, but if you go into the American Constitution, the American Constitution talks about legal and illegal aliens. That's in the American Constitution. It doesn't talk about the word undocumented don't even exist in the Constitution. So if you want to change the word illegal, then you need to go in and change the Constitution, because it's there. And also, in terms of driving these people here, they use gang members, they use all of this. These people, like DACA, they've been in America for 30, 40 years. They're educated, a lot of them, but they don't want to go back to these countries. They could take back their skills, and they could rebuild that place and make it a viable place, but they don't want to do that. They want to stay here where everything has already been done. And they use...
Well, now... That takes a structural argument that I would disagree with. And so rather than just argue with you contentiously over that, I would say that my basis of information would be in part from the book Open Veins of Latin America by Eduardo Galeano, Venas Abiertas de Latin America. And I think it's quite a good read, because the dynamic that it exposes is very capitalist and very imperialist, and it shows how those countries are devastated by U.S. policies. And so rather than just say, I think people are driven here, I'll say that's my basis of information. And I thank you very much for giving your perspective as well, Michael. And I'll go to the next caller. Number to call, 503-231-8187. Cody is on the air.
Good morning, Teresa. Great show. Always love your show. You're keeping up on the latest current events, and you are a piece of platinum down there at KBOO. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
It's I wanted to call mainly because why everyone's getting obsessed with Trump, his tweets, and the Russia collusion thing. No one's really looking at the policies that he's running through the government. And it's almost as though there's some type of sleight of hand going on with him, and he's pretty good at it. I got to give him credit. There's a lot of palace intrigue going on with both Trump and the people who don't want him there. And what I mean palace intrigue is that if people don't remember that it was both the Republicans and the Democrats who gave him a lot of pushback. And I too believe that he was surprised. Everyone was surprised when he won the election, which, I don't know, sort of kind of goes in the overall argument that, you know, as far as I'm concerned, Teresa, that they've all been working with the Russians from the beginning.
Well, sure, and as Michael was saying, I think he was making a good point. I mean, if you look at Rex Tillerson, for example, and his multi-billion-dollar deals with giant oil tankers going out from the north of Russia on a continuous basis, it is, in a very trackable sense, a one-world government.
Well, yeah, yeah, and it's like, you know, I mean, the Clinton Foundation. There's a lot of things going on with people, you know, like Seth Rich, one doctor over the Clinton Foundation was found with a knife in his chest, and it was like considered suicide. And I figure a doctor could find a better way of killing themselves than doing a sepulto. So I mean, it's like there's a lot the average person. You know, we're getting a lot of convolution from both sides.
There's palace intrigue, as you say, I think. But I would also agree that the Trump investigation draws attention, whether intentionally or not, from things like the fact that the Republicans, after blocking federal appointees for years and years by refusing to hold hearings, are now moving forward at a tremendous pace, setting people into judgeships, reactionary people. Not just right-wing, but really just fascistic people who will be there for the next generation. They are affecting the next generation, at least.
Oh, and the people who are going in are completely unqualified for the job. They could not answer simple legal questions for the job.
Shocking, isn't it?
Yeah, the boards who was asking them simple questions, any clerk should know, they could not. Court clerk, they could not answer that question. So I'm just saying, as when I'm looking at a lot of this, you know, I'm trying to look at the big picture, and I'm trying not to go in some type of way to where I'm not seeing what's really going on. And yeah, I just wanted to say that. And thanks a lot for your show.
Okay, and thanks for calling in then. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. And I will acknowledge that this may draw attention from heavier issues, certainly the impending war with North Korea and the federal judgeships affecting our children and grandchildren. The need for revolution in this country. We can't afford to allow capitalist hegemony, worldwide capitalist hegemony, to destroy the entire planet. And it's getting harder and harder to deny the fact that climate change is upon us after the monstrous hurricane season and the fire and now mudslide season in California. The diminution of ice on the northern polar cap, the motion of gigantic icebergs from the southern ice cap. Danger. I wave my robot arms. But nonetheless, I believe that some attention should be paid, some attention, to the timeline and to the ongoing investigations by Robert Mueller and by the Senate committees, whatever their motivation is. They are exposing just how corrupt the Trump Organization is. And I had gotten as far as the Facebook campaign in fall 2016, going to the Guardian's account as Russian imposter accounts spread divisive propaganda throughout social media. The Trump campaign experiments aggressively with micro-targeting on Facebook, making on an average day 50 to 60,000 ads, according to former digital director Brad Parscale. And Parscale, speaking for myself, has revealed to the media that he didn't phrase it this way, but his techniques were the same as what the Russians are being charged with, and he had a multi-billion dollar account to play with, and boy, did he play. And that doubled down on the demagoguery, the racist demagoguery, which essentially won the election and exposed for people like me who, you know, wished that we're not so. In other words, white people like me who wished that we're not so, exposed just how many virulently racist people will vote their racism in the United States. That's 62 million people who are absolutely vigorously, aggressively, evilly racist. I know it's very unpopular to say that. And if you voted for Trump, you can call in, and if you spend any time at all talking to me, I will expose your racism. It's that easy. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. Now, continuing with the timeline, in November, of course, Donald Trump was elected president of the United States, to his great surprise. And during the transition in December and January, Trump aides kept up contacts with Russian operatives on matters of policy and appeared to hide those conversations from the U.S. government in public. Michael Flynn, the former general Michael Flynn, lied to the FBI about the conversations, then later admitted that Jared Kushner had directed him to seek certain policy commitments from the Russian ambassador. Jared Kushner, of course, the son-in-law of Donald Trump. Then if you move to May 2017, Trump fired the FBI director. He was quoted saying in an interview, "When I decided to just do it, I said to myself, you know, this Russia thing with Trump and Russia is a made-up story." And I guess that exposes just how dumb Trump is to incriminate himself out loud. And the incriminating part, of course, was him saying, quote, "You know, this Russia thing with Trump and Russia is a made-up story." And that's why he fired the FBI director. And that, of course, is obstruction of justice. And as I was saying, I really doubt that Congress, as it is currently constituted, will successfully impeach and convict the president. It's just not in their interest to do so. They're making good money being loyal to the roaring fascist corporate hegemony that is now in power with the Republican power, with the Republican Party. So they ain't going to do that. But certainly public pressure and public awareness and awareness of just how sleazy Trump and his organization are could discourage the enthusiastic racist voters who put him in power in the first place. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. Now go to the next caller. Steve, you're on the air.
Hi, Teresa. Yeah, I think to presume that all 60 million votes cast for Trump were cast by, you know, vile racists is it's just disingenuous. It's not fair.
Does it make you mad?
It's simply not going to be constructive towards.
It's obviously true. I'm not going to let people off the hook anymore for this. The biggest thing that keeps whiteness going is pretending that whiteness isn't there.
Again, that type of language is not going to build bridges.
I'm going to double down. It's time for people to answer for what they actually do, as opposed to making excuses.
Well, you'll simply isolate and continue to marginalize the progressive interests that you presume that you ostensibly hope to advance.
Oh, because we've done so well by going along to get along, haven't we?
I'm just telling you what's not going to work. I mean, you can try it. Certainly, you can do whatever you want. It's simply not going to work.
Well, it certainly makes people jump.
It's not making me jump. I'm sad for you. It's ignorant. It's misguided. It's immature. It's simply not constructive. If you want to build a better alternative, you're simply not going to get there by labeling all 60 million of those Americans who voted for Trump as deplorable.
Had forgotten. They didn't notice that Trump was racist, that he made dog whistle and even out loud statements about how bad Mexican people were, about how bad black people were. He just goes on and on about it, and he doubles down at every chance. And you're trying to tell me that these 62 million people didn't notice? They didn't care what it was.
I'm gonna wish you a lot of luck getting elected or getting your candidate elected by criticizing the voters.
I don't want to elect a candidate. I want to overthrow the society.
If you listen carefully.
I want to destroy capitalism. I want to destroy whiteness.
If you listen carefully to Mike Pompeo's interview on the Sunday morning talk shows this past weekend, he said that Americans got the president they deserved. That was his defense.
Well, now that's certainly
Trump's
true.
Trump's idiotic tweet. So, you know, you're going to get the candidate. You're going to get the level, the amount of political power you deserve.
I'm not here for political power. I'm here to destroy the system. Hey, thank you very much for your call. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and other frequencies here in Cascadia, and on KBOO.FM on the World Wide Web, where you can donate, by the way, and keep the station going. Very, very important in these days in which the web is being taken over increasingly by corporate interests, and you're being directed away on your social media from organizations like KBOO.FM. But it is through KBOO.FM that we stand, and we have a larger audience. And it's on KBOO.FM that we go out to all the ships at sea.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Trivia Fundraiser for Northeast Neighborhood Emergency Teams on Thursday, January 11th at 6 p.m. at the Lagunitas Community Room in Portland. This fundraiser includes disaster theme and pop culture trivia led by Katie Wolf, food, beer, cider, and information about your local neighborhood emergency teams. Again, that's the Trivia Fundraiser for Northeast Neighborhood Emergency Teams on Thursday, January 11th at 6 p.m. at the Lagunitas Community Room, 237 Northeast Broadway Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight